Hello, this is Debbie back again on Wednesday, September 30th, Part 2, Herald Review. Starting as we always do with death notices, Decatur, Robinson, Jacob. Jacob Robinson, 91, of Decatur, Illinois, passed away September 23rd, 2015, in Symphony Nursing Home. Services celebrating the life of Jacob Robinson will be held. Visitation Friday, October 2nd, from 5 to 7 at Antioch Missionary Baptist Church. Homecoming service Saturday, October 3rd, 2015, 11 a.m. Antioch Missionary Baptist Church with Reverend Dr. C.D. Stewart officiating. Burial, Greenwood Cemetery. Professional services entrusted to Walker Funeral Services in Decatur. Decatur, Carter, Larry Wayne. Larry Wayne Carter, 56, of Decatur, was called home on Thursday, September 24, 2015, after battling a long illness. Funeral services will be held Friday, October 2, 2015, at noon at Walker Funeral Service with visitation 1 hour before service. Burial, Greenwood Cemetery. Decatur, White, Loretta. Loretta Kerr White of Decatur died at 4:30 a.m. Sunday, September 27th, in Bowden Creek Living Center. Funeral service will be 11:30 a.m. Thursday, October 1st, at Christ United Methodist Church on Summit in Decatur, with Pastor Kelly Cox officiating. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. till service time on Thursday, also at the church. Burial will be in Long Point Cemetery, Niantic, Illinois. Tanius Logan Funeral Services and Care is in charge of the arrangements. The family requests casual attire. Decatur, Hobson Larimer, Teresa. Teresa Joan Hobson Larimer, 85, of Decatur, formerly of Blue Mound and Paris, entered into eternal rest September 27th, 2015. Mass of Christian burial will be held at 10 a.m. on Thursday, October 1st, at Holy Trinity Catholic Church, Stonington, Illinois. The family will receive friends for a time of visitation tonight from 5 to 7 at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Blue Mound, with a rosary service at 7 p.m. An additional visitation will be held 2:30 to 3 p.m. on Thursday at St. Mary's Catholic Church in Paris. Joan will be laid to rest in St. Mary's Cemetery, Paris, Illinois. Niantic, Bossel, Elizabeth G. Elizabeth Betty G. Bossel, 90, of Niantic, Illinois, passed away at 4:03 a.m. Saturday, September 26th, at Decatur Memorial Hospital. A memorial service will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, October 3rd, at Britlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, with visitation from 11 a.m. until service time. Burial will be at Macon County Memorial Park, Harrison, Illinois. Memorials may be made to the Northeast Community Fund or Homeward Bound. Decatur, Carruthers, Robert Spencer, Sr. Robert Spencer Carruthers, Sr., 65, of Decatur, passed from this life September 24, 2015, in Decatur. Memorial services to celebrate his life will be held 11 a.m. Saturday, October 3rd, at Solid Rock Full Gospel Church. Cremation services provided by Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home and Cremation Center on Oakland Avenue in Decatur. Condolences and memories may be shared at the Graceland Fairlawn website. Decatur, Henry Ajajade. Aja Jade Henry, infant daughter of Ashley Jackson and Jamal Henry, was placed in the loving arms of Jesus at 3:58 a.m. Saturday, September 26th, at St. John's Hospital in Springfield. Graveside services will be at noon. We're at noon today, September 30th, in the Garden of Angels at Graceland Cemetery, with the flight home ceremony to concluding the service. The family of Aja Jade Henry is being served by the Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Please view the online obituary and send condolences at their website. Maroa, Francis, Audrey. Audrey April Francis, 88, in Maroa, Illinois, passed away 2:10 a.m. September 27th at Decatur Memorial Hospital, Decatur. No services are planned at this time. Calvert Funeral Home, Maroa, Illinois, assisted the family with cremation rites. Decatur, Sabatka, Raymond L. Raymond L. Ray Sabatka, 79, Decatur. Ray Sabatka and Son, construction owner operator, died Friday, September 25th, 2015. Services were today at 2 p.m. Visitation was yesterday. Private burial, Lutheran Cemetery memorials, Homeward Bound Pet Shelter. Decatur, Dennis H. Decatur, Dennis H. Weeble, 64, died September 21st, 2015, in Puyallup, Washington. A private memorial service will be held. Family and friends are encouraged to share memories and condolences at the website. Graveside burial arrangements to be scheduled. Sebens, Gary Lee, Mount Zion. Gary Lee Sieben, 74, of Mount Zion, Illinois, passed away Sunday, September 27th, at 7 a.m. in his residence. Family and friends. The family will receive friends for a visit, for a time of visitation Thursday evening, October 1st, from 5 p.m. until 7 p.m. at Dawson and Wyckoff Funeral Home, Mount Zion. The family requests casual attire for service. A graveside service will be held in Mount Zion Township Cemetery. Memorials may be made to the International Essential Tremor Foundation. Post Office Box 14005, Lenexa, Lenexa, Kansas, 66285. Messages of condolence may be sent to the family through the website at Dawson Wyckoff. Shelbyville, Dill, Vivian Eileen. Vivian Eileen Toots Till, 91, of Shelbyville, Illinois, passed away at 3:55 p.m. on Sunday, September 27th, in Fairhaven's Christian Home in Decatur. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. on Saturday, October 3rd, in Lockhart Green Funeral Home in Shelbyville. Visitation will take place 1 hour before the service. Burial will be in Glenwood Cemetery, Shelbyville. Memorials may be made in Vivian's memory to 4th Street United Methodist Church of Shelbyville. And the last of the death notices in the paper today. Vandalia Farley, Russ Clayton. Russ Clayton Farley, 86, of Vandalia, passed away on Saturday, September 26, 2015, in Vandalia. Services will be held at 10 a.m. on Friday at First United Methodist Church in Vandalia with Reverend Terry Westerfield officiating. Burial will be in Fairlawn Cemetery in Vandalia. Visitation will be held from 9 a.m. until time of services on Friday at the church. Hohit and File Funeral Home in Vandalia are in charge of arrangements. Should friends desire, contributions may be sent to the Evans Public Library in Vandalia or the First United Methodist Church of Vandalia. And that is the end of this section of the paper. Continuing the article on this state budget impasse, and the last thing we read in that article was said by Representative Brady, we know that we cannot go on like this. We all want this solved, Shearer said. That's one thing we have in common. At issue is the Republican governor's insistence that Democrats approve a number of pro-business, anti-union proposals before he signs off on a tax increase designed to balance the budget. Democrats have balked at the changes sought by Bronner, saying they would hurt the middle class. We can't give that up, Shearer said. The stalemate has left the state without a spending blueprint and a test of political wills between the former businessman from Winnetka and longtime House Speaker Michael Madigan, Democrat, Chicago. Although Bronner called could call the General Assembly back to the Capitol for a special session on a budget. A spokesman did not address that issue in response to questions Tuesday. But spokesman Lance Trover said the governor is committed to his agenda. Quote, the governor remains optimistic that the majority party will work with him on passing reforms that will grow the economy and turn our state around, Trover said. State Senator Dale Ryder, Republican Mattoon, said he spent much of the summer trying to remind voters that what Rahner and Republican supporters are trying to accomplish by overhauling state laws to make the state more competitive with its neighbors. The impasse, Ryder said, is not senseless. This is an important debate about what state government should be, how big, how much money should it spend. I'm telling people to get engaged, be informed, Ryder said. State Senator Andy Menard, Democrat, Bunker Hill, said voters should not assume lawmakers are merely sitting around waiting for Rahner and the leaders to get busy. I'm vocal every day, Menard says. I have phone calls with my colleagues every day. But Menard said, the governor calls a leadership meeting. I think the chances of any movement. Until the governor calls a leadership meeting, I think the chances of any movement are slim to none. In the spring, Menard praised Rahner for an actively meeting with lawmakers to discuss issues. Now, however, he said he doesn't see the governor doing that. I think the governor is completely disengaged right now, Menard said. As for predicting when the standoff will end, no one sees a quick resolution. It's frustrating. It's disappointing. Some of the glimmers of hope I saw over the summer have faded, Brady said. End of that article. On a more positive note, this is an AP article out of Springfield. 20 countries take Illinois dairy tours, see milk production. Illinois officials are hosting visitors from nearly 20 countries, which are potential milk buyers. Representatives from Dominican Republic, Ecuador, Mexico, Nepal, and Thailand are among those participating in this year's Illinois Dairy Tour. The event began Monday at Rolling Lawns Farms in Greenville, Illinois. It was there that in 1915, one of the state's first Holstein cows. The event began Monday at Rolling Lawns Farm in Greenville. It was there that in 1915, one of the state's first Holstein cows was registered. Sounds like 100 years ago to me. Warren Getch is acting director of the Department of Agriculture. He says Illinois is 22nd in the nation in producing milk, and the dairy tour is a key part of the state's marketing plan. The tour will also stop at Truro Nutrition USA in Highland, the University of Illinois Dairy Research Facility in Urbana, GEA in Naperville, and the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. End of that article by AP. In the section of the website for heraldreview.com, something called Weird News. I think we used to call them human interest. Boise, Idaho, group hopes to save tree grown from seeds taken on Apollo 14. Boise, Idaho. This is by AP. Boise, Idaho residents are trying to save a tree that was grown from seeds taken aboard the Apollo 14 mission to the moon. The Idaho Statesman reports the loblolly pine planted in 1977 on Lowell Elementary School's campuses dehydrated and infected with insects. Eagle Historical Museum curator Elena Dunn brought the tree to the school's attention. Patty Henequin, who has a third grader enrolled at Lowell, is now leading the effort to save the so-called moon tree. The tree has a special place in our history, she said. It's a fascinating thing to help teach kids about space exploration and to tie in a little Idaho history. Astronaut Stuart Roosa included the seeds in his personal items at the request of the Forest Service, in part to test the effects of zero gravity. Roosa was a former Forest Service smoke jumper. Most of the seeds germinated after returning from the journey in space and were Most of the seeds germinated after returning from their journey in space and were distributed to schools and other entities to grow. Demand was so high, the Forest Service grew more seedlings from cuttings of the trees. Lowell got its tree because the son of then-Governor John Evans was enrolled there. It's unclear where all the moon trees were planted, with many of the known trees having died off since the 70s. Arborists with Idaho Tree Preservation in Boise are donating time to deal with the insects. The North End Neighborhood Association has agreed to pay for the 275 gallons of water the pine needs each week. Lowell students are making a plaque for the unmarked tree, which Principal Nick Smith said was hard to identify at first. "We had to gather cones from both trees to figure out which one was the loblolly," he said. The story has been corrected to reflect the seeds were aboard Apollo 14, not Apollo 13. This was information from the Idaho Statesman. End of the article. The second article we're reading here is dispensaries offer free marijuana to California fire victims. This is out of Middleton, California by the AP. Medical marijuana dispensaries in Northern California are offering up to $200 in free cannabis per patient affected by a hugely destructive wildfire. The Los Angeles Times reports the two companies are offering free products at five dispensaries in San Francisco, Santa Rosa, Sebastopol, and Lake County through October 7th. Patients eligible for the products must have a medical marijuana prescription and home addresses in Cobb, Kelseyville, Middletown, or Hidden Valley Lake. Those communities were hit the hardest by the fire that ripped through 118 square miles, destroyed more than 1,950 homes, and killed four people. The two companies donated $20,000 worth of marijuana-related items in all. The offer began last Thursday. The wildfire was one of the worst in state history. It is nearly fully contained. And that's the end of that article and the end of what I think we're going to be reading in the Weird News. That was the end of most of the news in the Herald and Review, so we are switching over to the Decatur Tribune site. Editor and publisher Paul Osborne. New downtown Decatur Staley Chicago Bears mural looks fantastic. If you haven't seen the Decatur Staley's Chicago Bears mural, it's been created on the west side of the building in the 100 block of East Main Street. It's worth a trip downtown to view. Decatur Tribune sports editor J. Thomas McNamara has the details about the recent creation of the mural on page 12 of today's print edition of the Tribune, but the size of it's amazing. It's a great addition to the downtown area, and it's already one of the treasures of Decatur that I've promoted over the years, especially during my years as mayor. We have so many great treasures in our city. And he goes on to say, best wishes to Paula Marley, who's retiring from the city of Decatur today, September 30th, after 33 years of outstanding service to the legal department and citizens of Decatur. Thanks so much, Paula, for your many years of service to the community. Then, nice drive. A huge improvement was made last week with the paving of North Franklin Street through the downtown area. It's so nice to drive on that new, smooth surface with well-defined painted lines to keep the traffic flowing smoothly. The street was getting to the point that I think there were potholes inside the pothole filters. It's a big, big improvement. Next, as far as his editorial's going, congratulations to former Macon County Sheriff Lee Halspitbull, who has been selected for the 2015 Penny Severance Integrity Award. I've known Lee for a long time, and the photo on him on page 6 of today's print edition is one that I shot while I was doing a story about his retirement in 1998. The award is well-deserved for a multitude of reasons, and especially his long record of service to the people of Macon County. Under the small headline in this editorial of Tragedy, continuing, we lost the screen here for a moment. Now it's back. Tragedy, the second annual Officer Robin Vogel Memorial 5K is going to be held on October 3rd, exactly 10 years to the day when she died from injuries after being struck by a drunk driver on October 1st, 2005, and passing away 2 days later on October 3rd from those injuries. One of the most difficult duties I performed as mayor was representing the city at her funeral. Her death was so sad and senseless. I canceled that week's council meeting. No one was ready to focus on city business after experiencing that tragic loss. It seemed like just yesterday, not 10 years ago. Next, item in his editorial column here, Loss Felt. I was walking through Central Park one morning last week and said hello to a city employee and noticed she was troubled. It's been a rough day, she told me, choking back tears. My supervisor, Jerry Niehiser, died yesterday. I was stunned. Jerry was only 48 years old when he passed away. My condolences to the family and thank you to the city employee I see every day doing her job to make the park beautiful, even on a day like the one last week when it was really difficult to work. Good for her. Julie Moore Wolf is enjoying her role as mayor of our great city. I talked with her at the CONO event, C-O-N-O, all caps, in Central Park Saturday, and it was evident that during the short time since she was appointed to replace the late Mayor Mike McElroy, she's already a mayor that enjoys serving in the office and that enjoyment is apparent to those she meets. I love it when a mayor expresses joy at being able to serve in that office. That is so very important, considering the mayor is a spokesperson for our city. My path has crossed Julie's in many ways over the years, and I've always had the highest respect for her, and I'm very pleased she was selected to be our mayor. She's off to a good start in setting exactly the right tone for the community. Next. City Councilman Jerry Dawson was also at the CONO event and told me that this term as councilman will be his last. Jerry has been and continues to be an outstanding city councilman, but when he finishes his second term in 18 months, that's an 8 years of council service plus his years of service plus all the years working in the sheriff's office. He certainly has earned some time away from public office, but he will be missed when he steps down. He's everywhere. I also talked briefly with City Councilman Pat McDaniel at the CONO event. I don't think there's ever been a city councilman that I can remember who attended as many events and meetings as Pat. Actually, it'd be news if Pat wasn't at some event. Keep up the good work of getting out and being with the people, Pat. Bad news. Caterpillar's restructuring announcement last week means there's a good chance of more layoffs at the Decatur plant. Great news. Friday's marketing launch for the Midwest Inland Port points to a bright economic future for our community and beyond. Lots of great plans, and the people to help them make them happen were present, including Governor Bruce Rauner, ADM President and CEO Juan Luciano, and other movers and shakers. The answer to bad news is a healthy dose of great news, and we had both on Thursday and Friday last week. Then he says at the very end, listen to the City Hall Insider Hour with Paul Osborne on Byers and Company at 7 every Thursday morning. So that's tomorrow morning, 7 a.m. over News Talk 1340 WSOY. Visit our website at Decatur Tribune and also find us at Decatur Tribune Facebook page. So that's the end of his column for today. Article, Decatur Police Department to partner with Project AVA, A-V-A, in its Halloween boutique program by being a local collection site for costumes. The Decatur Police Department will partner with the Project AVA and their Halloween boutique program this Halloween season by being a local collection site for new or gently used Halloween costumes. Halloween is such an exciting time for kids. It's a time for them to run around carefree and collect candy, participate in their in-class Halloween parties, and attend parades in their communities and at their schools, all well dressed up as their favorite characters or traditional Halloween icons. Unfortunately, for some children, this is not the reality of this childhood holiday. Some families struggle with providing daily essentials, much less purchasing a Halloween costume. Often these children feel left out or simply don't participate due to their family not having the means to purchase the costume. Project AVA has therefore introduced their Halloween boutique program from September 25th through October 23rd. The project will be collecting new and gently used Halloween costumes from size toddler through youth size large at various collection sites in Edwardsville, Illinois, Decatur, and Orlando, Florida to provide children in need in these communities. Their goal is to reach children who would otherwise not have a costume and make their day just as enjoyable as the rest of their peers. Project AVA will take the collected costumes and drop them off at local schools, early childhood and parent education centers, and food pantries that have been identified as having a need. The costumes will then be distributed to the children that the schools and organizations see fit to keep the identity of the children and families private. If you wish to donate a costume to Project AVA, the Decatur Police Department will have a collection box available in our front lobby from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Monday through Friday. The Decatur Police Department is located at 707 West South Side Street. If you wish to donate financially, that can be done through the Project ABA website. To view their website and for additional information and their mission to support at-risk children and parents by aligning with the established community agencies, providing financial resources, and a community of dedicated volunteers, go to project-ava.org or their new Facebook page. Always value another. Questions about collection times and program can be addressed to the Decatur Police Department Professional Standards Unit at 424-2743. In the sports scene, this is done as a caption for a picture of a group of people on the field here. Bittersweet. Matt McElroy, son of the late Decatur mayor and St. Teresa alum Mike McElroy, addresses the St. Teresa crowd after his family presented an $18,000 check to Dr. Ken Hendrickson, St. Teresa principal and chief executive officer, and athletic director Todd Boylan. Matt's mother, Lynn, Mike's brother, husband Tim, they're all there. The check to St. Teresa's athletics came from memorial gifts in Tuna's memory. End of article. And finishing part two with news in and around Decatur with the Herald and Review and the Tribune, we have Transform MU Capital Campaign finishing strong. Millikan University reveals plans for new $27 million university commons. Reading from this article as we finish September 30th, 2015. With less than 4 months remaining in Millikan University's $85 million Transform MU Capital Campaign, TMU, university officials have unveiled architectural renderings of the new University Commons, one of the campaign's three building projects. A groundbreaking for the 87,000-square-foot facility is scheduled for November, with construction expected to be in full swing in early 2016 and completion prior to the start of the fall 2017 semester. With the exception of Schilling Hall, an original Millikan structure erected in 1902, the new University Commons is the largest building project in university history in terms of square footage. The $27 million University Commons includes the Staley Library, will be created through a blending of both old and new, as the original Staley Library structure, completed in 1976, is completely renovated and a large addition is constructed on the south side of the building. The new University Commons and the Staley Library will invigorate campus life, says Dr. Patrick E. White, Millikan University president. As a new front door to campus, the Commons will re-energize campus learning and living spaces in the center of campus and become a natural home for collaborative learning efforts among faculty, students, and administrators. Millikan has such a vibrant student population, says Rafaela Prang, Dean of Students. What is needed is a place to enhance students' campus life experiences. The Commons is the perfect solution, since some of the most important education at college occurs outside the classroom. From traditional student to PACE student to graduate student, from residential student to commuter student, from faculty member to alumni and community members, this new University Commons will be everyone's home base and living room at Millikan. That is the end of the first part of that article on the Transform MU campaign and the unveiled new University Commons. And ending part two, 9:30:15 for Decatur. This is Debbie closing and saying, talk to you again soon.